When they don't know the answer to a question, clinicians are expected to disclose the gaps in their knowledge or their inability to make a prediction. But expression of appropriate self-doubt hasn't been included as a core competency in medical education or embedded in the development of clinical artificial intelligence tools. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Raja Ali Abdelnour, editor of Clinical Development and AI Innovation at NEJM Group and an associate physician in the Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Division at Brigham and Women's Hospital. Dr. Abdelnour has co-authored a perspective article about management of uncertainty in medicine, including by AI systems. Dr. Abdelnour, starting with the basics, what types of uncertainty do clinicians and trainees face on a regular basis?
So Steve, just a couple of disclosures. I am not a computer scientist by training. I'm an educator. I am a scientist at the bedside. I'm a clinician. And also I need to disclose that I will also confabulate. Just like AI does, the human mind will confabulate. And so I'd ask you and the viewers and listeners to fact check me and let us know if I say something wrong. Uncertainty is embedded in medicine. A lot of what we do when we're thinking about a diagnosis, when we're thinking about a plan, is trying to forecast the likelihood of a particular illness and the likelihood of a particular management working. And that is embedded in the fact, and this is factual uncertainty. And then there is a uncertainty related to the environments we're in. Uncertainty such as not knowing where the crash cart is, not knowing how a particular patient or a teammate on the clinical team is going to respond. So there's a lot of workplace uncertainty, and uncertainty permeates everything we do in practice with patients and with trainees as well.
So you say in your article that the act of expressing uncertainty involves avoiding premature closure and shifting between distinct thinking styles. So what cognitive processes are involved in those kinds of shifts?
Medical education is really aimed at creating very efficient physicians, physicians that are able to work efficiently in a very busy workplace. They can recognize exemplars of patients when they come in with complaints of chest pain or shortness of breath, quickly recognize what's going on. Efficiency is very important. But clinicians should also be trained to recognize moments where something doesn't fit. A patient presents with symptoms that are a little bit different than usual. There's a new medication that they're encountering, a new treatment that their colleagues are mentioning, but that I myself have is new to me. And when we recognize these moments of uncertainty where things aren't familiar, experienced clinicians will slow down and think. We'll slow down, even pause and reflect a little bit on why is it that I'm not recognizing this particular setting and what should I do? A lot's been written on the topic, in particular in surgery, where so if a surgeon is dissecting a particular plane and they don't recognize a situation or they're faced with an uncertain element, their hands will actually slow down, and this is in a measurable way. And that skill, recognizing that uncertainty, is a prompt. It's a prompt to saying, oh, I don't know what's going on. And it's a prompt to shift from an efficient way of practice to a much more deliberate analytical way of practice, sometimes labeled as innovative way of practice, where you have to innovate on the spot on what to do next.
So you talk in your article about this sort of expression of appropriate self-doubt. On the one hand, not being a core competency in medical education, and on the other hand, not being a part of AI tools. So starting with medical education, why hasn't that been a capability focused in the training?
As we think about how medical education is designed, how curricula are designed, and I point the readers to a review article on competency-based medical education published in the journal. Competency-based medical education starts with defining competencies that are inherent to a practitioner, to a learner, to a student. And then these competencies express themselves as activities, as behaviors. It's very hard for educators to assess exactly what goes on in the brain of a learner. And the only way to do so is by assessing what they do, their behaviors, their activities. And so separate, and it's important to think about these two things as a little bit different. uncertainty and its expression of uncertainty, saying I don't know, are part of the competencies. We know that clinicians need to recognize the limits of their knowledge. But what's been really hard is to assess that. How do you know that clinicians, when they meet their epistemic boundaries, the limits of their knowledge, the limit of what's familiar, how do we know that they will actually slow down to think? How do we know that we'll actually say that, I don't know? And that's been missing, is that entrustable professional activity of saying, I don't know.
So in the article, we propose that the ability to explicitly say, I don't know, when appropriate, gets implemented as a core entrustable behavior, a behavior that we can entrust to both clinicians and machines, and a behavior that can an external evaluator, whether it's a developer or an educator, can observe and document for humans and machines. This entrustable professional activity, or EPA, can translate the virtue of epistemic humility into a clinical competency that's associated with a measurable behavior, the competency of recognizing the limits of one's epistemic boundary, the limits of one's knowledge, and articulating when that limit has been crossed,
which would then trigger innovative practice that would trigger critical thinking.
And then turning to AI, you say in your article that if AI tools are going to support clinical reasoning, they're going to have to be able to indicate uncertainty. How today do these tools typically behave when they're faced with competing or incomplete information?
So just to take a step back, as myself and others, when large language models first came to the scene in late 2022, we very quickly recognized how powerful they were, right? Within seconds, they were able to solve very complex clinical cases. And a lot of the research at the time aimed to document their accuracy, their clinical reasoning prowess. Concurrently, we started developing a taxonomy of their failure, a taxonomy of their risks. One of them is confabulation or hallucinations, where they just give errors, factual errors, and including bias, right? Some of the very early studies and then confirmed later showed that these models are biased. If you give two cases, if you give a case to a model, and you give a variant that's identical in everything except sex or gender, you will get different answers. But more recently, there's a new type of failure that's been documented, which is the fact that these models, when given prompts that contain false information, as for example, in the case of the perspective, if an AI is given a list of drugs, and in that list, there's a Pokemon, the name of a Pokemon character, which is a video game character, in most of the cases, the AI will not recognize that drug name as false. And so that points to a new type of risk, which is this inability to detect error, this vulnerability to fallacies, and their inability to say, I don't know, when they should say, I don't know. In fact, when I give talks these days, I start by saying how powerful these models are, and then I put on the screen, I ask a question. And the question is aimed to the human audience. The question has a actual factual error. I ask about a test that doesn't exist. And most of the attendees will say, I don't know. Whereas the recent studies have shown that most AI will not say, I don't know. They just go with it and they confabulate. And so that's a very important risk that is highly dependent on the agent, whether it's a human agent or an AI agent, recognizing when they've crossed this epistemic boundary, when they've crossed the limit of their own knowledge. Humans are able to sense that, right? This felt uncertainty. Machines don't.
So in what clinical contexts should AI tools be able to identify uncertainty?
One would argue that AI tools should be able to identify uncertainty in almost all settings, right? We would not want to interact with an agent that cannot say, I don't know, when it truly has no pre-trained knowledge or databases or facts to support an output. But it's a tall order. It's a tall order for humans. It certainly is going to be a tall order for models. I think it's really important to be working with agents that can recognize uncertainty and surface it in high-stakes situations. And here we're referring to situations at the bedside, taking care of patients, an increasing number, if not the vast majority of clinicians in the US are now using large language model-based clinical decision support tools at the bedside. They're using these models to guide their care, to find the best treatment, to think about the next diagnostic test. In these settings, it's really imperative that the models say, I don't know. Will they truly ever develop an epistemic monitor? Will they truly develop the ability to say, I don't know, just like humans do? I'm not sure. But certainly having developers think about mechanisms that allow a model to, at the very least, appropriately simulate recognizing uncertainty is going to be really, really important.
So a final question. What are the next steps? What should we be doing to, on the one hand, move toward educating clinicians, and on the other, developing AI systems that can express this sort of uncertainty?
Yeah, a couple of things. One thing that's really, I was very impressed by, or I'm impressed by, is when AI developers are creating their models and deploying them and launching them, the due diligence that they're doing is actually creating benchmarks. And researchers and AI developers have been very creative at developing very effective benchmarking systems to test their tool's ability to make a diagnosis, to come up with a management plan. And a lot of it is published. Some of it is open. Some of it is actually owned by the AI developers, which is potentially problematic. But as I've looked at these benchmarks, including the benchmarks of creating clinical vignettes that specifically test a model's ability to say, I don't know, that made me reflect on our own education, meaning it would be useful to have similar benchmarks also for trainees, where, for example, trainees could be given cases or clinical vignettes embedded in which there's embedded falsehoods or false tests, and where the expected behavior that you assess for is, could a student say, I don't know, when there is a factitious element in a particular case. And so developing these benchmarks, both for the human clinician and the AI co-pilot, so to speak, is I think the next step forward. And these are being developed right now. There's a very robust line of research defining benchmarks across a multitude of clinical tasks, including the ability to say, I don't know. Traditionally, when we think of the Turing test, is when a person doesn't recognize that they're actually working with a machine, and they think that they're working with a human. We argue that maybe the next Turing test is when an AI can reliably say, I don't know. Whether that will happen or not, I don't know.
Thank you, Dr. Abdelnour.
My pleasure.